Hi, it's Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm a top-rated life coach, an international best-selling author, and a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I'm on a mission to help you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. The experts on this show will help you achieve work-life balance so that you can experience abundance in seven pillars of life: spirituality, health, emotions, romance, mindset, social, and financial life. When you have all seven pillars of life in alignment, you are balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Let's go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman. We are taking you from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. We so appreciate your loyalty, your support. You're tuning in to all these amazing episodes. And because of you listeners, we're in the top 1% of all podcasts globally. So I just thank you from the bottom of my heart. Keep listening and subscribing and sharing this podcast, because this is a movement showing people that you don't have to go through life angry, overwhelmed, drained, and exhausted. You can actually be balanced, beautiful, and abundant, and live this joyous, free life that we're talking about on the show. So we have a special guest today, celebrity intuitive author, Susan, is it Grau?
Grau.
Like Grau. Okay. Like Allie McGraw. Yes. Susan Grau, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Yes, I'm so happy to have you here. And let me tell my audience a little bit about your very illustrious background. So Susan Grau is an international celebrated celebrity intuitive medium. She is an author, a soul healer, and an inspirational speaker. She is licensed in many, many things. Some of them that I can have time to go into. There's such a long list. Reiki master, an addiction specialist, a hypnotherapist, a member of the Healing Touch Professional Association. And then you just told me before we hit record, you're a doctor of divinity too.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. So many certifications and so much education. She has a specialty in grief therapy. Her upcoming book is called Infinite Life, Infinite Lessons, and it is published by Hay House. And in this book, she offers insights on grief and the afterlife. And this book is coming out in July, but if you're catching this podcast before then, you can grab it on her website. And what is your website?
SusanGrau.com.
SusanGrau.com. And she has unique abilities that have garnered so much attention from the media. Huge, huge outlets like Goop. She spoke at a Goop event. So we'll have to talk about how you met Gwyneth Paltrow. Elle Magazine, The Hollywood Reporter, and Style Magazine, just to name a few. So tell us, Susan, how did you get to be doing what you're doing? What was your journey to be this world famous intuitive?
I think it started when I was a child. I've been doing this since I was born. I have family who actually has this ability. However, at 4.5 years old, I was locked in an unplugged freezer in a garage.
Wait. How did that happen?
I was playing with some boys and they were older, and they said if I climbed up in this garage freezer and got popsicles, they would let me play with them longer. And I didn't know it wasn't plugged in. And I climbed up, and the next thing I know, the garage door closes. And I'm thinking, I'm in on the joke. I'm part of this. And then I realized I'm not part of this. And I was in there between 20 minutes and 2 hours.
And you were 5 years old?
4.5. Oh, I'm sure I was in there somewhere in between, but yeah. I had a very profound experience. At first, you know, I was terrified, screaming, et cetera. And then I wasn't. And I was in a place I'd never been, to my knowledge. I'm sure I had been there many times, but not this time I was in this journey. I had never seen it. And I was with beautiful spirits, and I got to see and learn all about the spirit world. I actually went to tons of different rooms and saw tons of different things, and got to be guided by the lights that were there, and felt very safe and very, you know, trusting of what was happening. And my mother heard your babies in the freezer, and she ignored it. She heard it a couple more times, and then she realized maybe there's a message coming in here. She was in the back of the house vacuuming, and so she couldn't hear me screaming, and the garage was separated. I don't think she would have heard me anyway. It wasn't an attached garage. And she ran out and opened up the freezer door, and I was ashen. And she panicked, and they didn't have cell phones. So she went to drop me to run and get a phone to call 911, and I snapped my chin open, and I took a breath. So I was meant to be here.
Yeah, you are. Wow.
From that time on, I was visited, and it just was my natural way of being. But I have to tell you, I was terrified. At first, I thought they were the boogeyman. I was just a little girl. I didn't understand why there were things there, and I was hearing things and knowing things. And then as time went on, it became my abnormally normal life, and it goes from there.
Wow. That is quite a story.
Yeah.
So your life purpose is now to heal people, especially with grief, but in many ways, you're a healer. If somebody's listening, how do they discover their life purpose?
Well, so there's a difference between life purpose and soul purpose. So I do want to say that.
Tell us the difference.
So life purpose is about what we're doing here as far as, you know, we have children, we get married or we don't. We, you know, build homes and we build a life and we decide what we're going to do for humanity. And that is the goal, is to step inside your empathic self and ask yourself, what fulfills me? Is it talking to people? Is it helping people clean their homes? Is it organizational skills? I mean, there's so many different ways that we can be of service to others. So basically, your life purpose is to be in service of others, but more importantly, your soul purpose, which is to be in service of yourself. And it's learning what self-love is. So we come here innately able to love others. It comes naturally to us, but loving, and you know, you hear that storyline that you can't love others if you don't love yourself. And I say nonsense. We were brought here to be able to do that. But do we really love ourselves? You know, it takes us years and years and years to even begin to feel the need and the knowing to be able to love ourselves, much less love ourselves. So it takes a lot of our energy, and our soul purpose is for the knowledge of how to get there and then creating that in our lives so that we feel a sense of calm and beauty and a knowing of who we are.
Beautiful. So I'm currently doing a self-love challenge this week. And why do you think on a spiritual journey that we're innately able to love others, but it's a journey, it's a path or a process for us to learn how to love ourselves? Like, why do you think it's so difficult, especially for women?
I think, look at society. It's societal. And you know how we're raised. So anyone I speak to that says they love themselves already are people who were raised without that self-doubt. They were raised to trust their judgment, their intuition. They were raised being honored. They weren't abused. They weren't felt less than, you know, during their journey. So I think a lot of it has to do with societal issues, you know, that women are. I would say, you know, we're created to be less than in some form. And then also how our, you know, family was, you know, that matters very much. And then how we were treated out in the world. So if our family was perfect, but we went to school and we were teased and picked on and bullied, you know, that changes how we feel about ourselves. And then also trust in our knowing. We don't learn that. So for instance, say you're in the kitchen and your mom's slamming the cupboards, is just for an instance. And you say to your mom, you know, why are you mad? And she says, I'm not mad. Go to your room. You know, then we go, I don't trust my judgment. So we learn, and we also learn with mothers, you know, myself included, you know, that we can be very controlling. We love our children. We want everything to be perfect for them. However, we teach them to listen to us instead of their instincts because we don't know any different. Yeah. You know, so when my children were little, I didn't know how to teach them to listen to their intuition. I just listened to mine. And mine was pretty accurate. So I never taught them how to come up with that accuracy themselves and learn from making the mistakes. So I think it's about that.
Yeah, I think society teaches women to put everyone else first and put themselves last, and that's actually applauded. But when women love themselves first, they can be called selfish.
Absolutely. So we have a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
I call it the pendulum. So we have selflessness, selfishness. We're not being selfless. Even if we're on the slider, we feel selfish, and that's what we're taught. I say there's a balance in the middle, and that's called self-love. And that's what we're trying to get to, is that middle. I always think of that ride at the carnivals, you know, that goes, the boat that goes up, and we go, no, I don't want to be up here. And then we go, oh, maybe I do want to see the world. And we're doing this. And then when we come back to that center, we go, okay, I made it. I got there. That's how I look at it. And so I really believe that, you know, that balance is what we need to be looking for. And women aren't taught to have balance. And I think it's getting better. You know, there's a woke society now where women are saying, hey, you know what? I matter and my voice matters. And no, I'm not going to do that. And yes, I'm going to do this. And we are learning to say no. And I really believe that is a huge form of self-love, is to be able to say your truth. You know, no, I'm not comfortable with that. No, I will not do that. You know, and mm-hmm. we were ridiculed for that. What do you mean no? You're supposed to serve me. And that was right. How we were treated. And you're supposed to do it the way I think you should. And you need to be beautiful and you need to be perfect, but you also need to clean house while you're beautiful and perfect. And you know, it was like we had to do it all. And so I think for women coming to that place of acknowledging that we don't have perfection here and that all we have to do is our best. And in that process, learn to love ourselves. We will find that there's peace and serenity in that whole process, and that we can look in the mirror and feel whole.
So speaking of women who are, you know, all about empowering others for self-love and self-care, Gwyneth Paltrow is definitely a leader in that space. How did you meet Gwyneth and end up speaking at her Goop event?
Well, I did it several times. I actually taught and I did readings and I did a speaking engagement. I met someone that came to one of my weekend retreats, and she happened to be on Goop. And when she got done, when the weekend was over, she said, I love the way you speak. I love the way you teach. I love what you do. Would you consider doing this? And I didn't even know what Goop was. I have to be honest. I had no clue. I'd been in my own little world, and she said Goop. And I thought, what is she talking about? Like that gooey stuff. I didn't know what she was talking about. And everyone was looking at me like, say something. And I said, okay, well, I need to know what Goop is. And she laughed and she said, you absolutely have to do this now. You have to. And so she invited me to go, and I started the first night with their VIP clientele. And that's when I met Gwyneth, and she spoke before we did it. And she was so eloquent and all about women. And I'm a person who likes to keep women up. I want women to rise. I don't want to drag them under or compete with them. And she's the same way. She's a beautiful human being, by the way. And I got to meet, you know, Jessica Alba and all these very powerful women, Olivia Wilde and Busy Phillips. And I was blown away by their sense of stature and their ability to resonate in loving themselves. And you could feel it, not ego, just self-love, which women are always told if they feel self-love, they're in their ego.
Right.
And so anyway, they asked me to come back a couple more times, and I did. And then they asked me to teach, and I did. And then they did a huge interview on me, which is what made me global, quite honestly, on my near-death experience. And that's in her magazine, her online magazine.
Wow. Well, that's the perfect segue to that experience. So share with us, what was your near-death experience and just about those type of experiences in general? Like what do they mean, and why do people get to like have a near death and come back?
Well, we're not meant to go. And I think, you know, we have accidents here, and I really fully believe that. I don't think everything is a planned event. That doesn't feel right to me. It has to make sense, right? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make sense. So if I pinch you and you bruise, that wasn't a planned event. I pinched you and you have a weakness in your body.
Right.
So, I, you know, when I got locked in the freezer, obviously I wasn't able to breathe after a while. Mm-hmm. And I remember three beautiful lights. They felt very bright and very strong. They told me to stop screaming and I didn't. I kept screaming. And then I heard it again, stop screaming. We're going to get your mommy. But first, and the next thing you know, I was out of my body. And I was on the bottom of these beautiful stairs. It was up above me was a Greco-Roman room. I didn't understand that then, but I do now. And I knew there was a well in the center. I studied under Dr. Raymond Moody, and he said to me, do you think the well could have been the tunnel? And I never even thought of it, but I called it a well. And I think it was the tunnel. And before I knew it, I thought to myself, how am I going to get up
these stairs? What's the tunnel for our listeners who aren't familiar?
So the tunnel is what you find many near-death experiencers talking about when they say they were pulled through a dark feeling, forces that were pulling them. And we call it the tunnel. And it's a dark, beautiful, safe, but dark arena, basically, that kind of sends you into a different level of vibrational frequency. And so that's what the tunnel is. And many, many NDEers see the tunnel. I saw the well. And I've heard of that.
Like they see a bright light at the end of a long, dark tunnel. The bright light pulls them.
Yes. And if you think about it, you know, leaving our bodies is a soul experience. So anything we do when we're going a long way, there's a journey. And that tunnel is the journey for the NDEer.
Do you guys want to know my biggest beauty secret? It's called liquid collagen. I have been drinking this medical grade collagen now every day for 3.5 years. My skin is glowing. My hair is long and thick and shiny. Nails have never been stronger. I feel amazing in my body. I am in my early 50s and I feel like I'm 25 years old again. And people do not know my age. They are like, what? You're kidding me. It's the liquid collagen. So you gotta try this. We have two formulas. One is for anti-aging and joint health, and the other one is for losing fat and body composition. All you need to do is click the link in the show notes and you have an amazing promo code. Check this out. It will transform your body and you will feel balanced, beautiful, and abundant. And now back to the podcast. NDE, for those listening, stands for near-death experience. So there's like a whole community of NDEers that are sharing what happened to them. And there are certain commonalities.
Yes, very much so. And interestingly enough, I work with the children. So children that have NDEs, they don't know how to verbalize it and understand it in a way that an adult NDEer may. So they talk about the same things, but they say it differently. So mine's the well, the adults always talk about the tunnel, you know, so there's a different energy behind that in what they're talking about. For me, it was just, I looked down and I saw movement of words and everyone, it was like DNA, being older and knowing that, you know, and it was twisting and turning and there were people's words and they were talking about, you know, what their heart's desires were. And I immediately said, do you answer all these? Because I didn't know where I was. And they said, oh no, Susie, sometimes what people desire the most isn't good for them. And then I was on this path that was this golden path, and I called it the Yellow Brick Road. And from there, I went to rooms and more rooms and more rooms. And they shared with me that we believe that we are the pavers of the path, and we are not. That they are the pavers of the path, and all we have to do is walk it. Where we come in is we have free will. So they pave the path, and then we have doors. And we can choose those doors. So we can do the right thing. We can do the wrong thing. We can do that semi-right thing. We can make a different choice. And that free will decides our soul expansion. So basically, those are some of the things they taught me. And then I saw the room of companions and the room of knowledge, which the room of knowledge was profound. It was, I would call virtual books now, but we didn't have them. I'm almost 65 and we didn't have them then. And, I saw souls talking about their life journey. and where, what they were going to do. And I could hear them saying, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And I'm going to learn about this and I'm going to expand here and expand there. And I heard what I consider to be angelic presence that comes, we understand them. And I heard, I don't know, sweetie, if you want to do all that. And oh, yes, I do. I do. You know, so we sign up for, some of us sign up for the PhD in the hard knocks. And some of us sign up for an easier journey. And depending upon the journeys that we're taking, you know, our life is that.
That is so wild. Absolutely wild.
I know. I think so too.
So you had that experience as a four and a half year old. And ever since then, you've been tuned into that world. How do you define clairsenses? I know you talk a lot about clairsenses in your work. Does that have to do with your connection to the divine, to the other side?
Absolutely. So our goal is to make sense of our senses, mm-hmm. right? And so that's very difficult to do because we live in the real world. We have a brain that tells us all this dysfunction and all the things that we should be doing. And so we have these senses that come in the gut. We have intuition, and intuition permeates in the gut level. It's, for instance, if you were to go to step in an elevator and as you're getting in, you feel this feeling that's uncomfortable because there's someone in there, but you don't listen to it and you get in and something happens. Maybe they just tell you off, but something happens that's uncomfortable. It's learning to go, I'm not comfortable right now. Go ahead and take the next one. But what we've learned to do is to please people, not be rude to people, not take care of ourselves. So we don't make sense of that sense of intuition. And we allow it to just be pushed aside. And then things happen that don't have to happen. So it's very important to learn about your intuitive sense. That's a clear feeling, by the way. Clair means clear in French. And so it's clear feeling, clairsentience, clear knowing, claircognizant. I am cognizant and I am clear on what I'm sensing coming into my thought pattern. Okay, not my brain, my thought pattern as far as dropping in. It feels like something just goes bing. And you just know it. You just know it. That's what we call claircognizance. I just know that your loved one's here. I just know that their name is blah, blah, blah. Okay, I'm not even going anywhere else in my body. There's clairaudient, which is clear hearing inside our head, outside our head. So sometimes you'll hear a voice inside your head say, you know, don't go down that road. And we just deny it. And we go down that road. And, you know, we shouldn't have been there at that place and time. We hear it outside of our head. You know, so I've had a lot of people tell me they hear their name being called. You know, after my son died, I heard my name being called. And I go, yes, it's called, you know, clairaudient. And they actually hear it. And I heard my brother when he died, you know, he was singing my name out. And then there's, clairvoyance. And clairvoyance, I think, is the easiest clair. We get a visual. And so it's very easy to describe when you have a visual, but sometimes clairvoyance is in our heads and we just know we're seeing something and then we see something go through our brain almost. It's like, whew, can I see that? You know, and we're looking for it, but nothing's there. That would be more inside of our heads. So people, once they learn that, they're able to tap into those senses. They start to make sense of those senses and they can live their life with their beautiful innate ability, which everyone has, to connect to our true journey, the spirit world, and what's around us. I mean, I teach and I did a class two nights ago and I said to my students when they got to my office, what color were the flowers as you were walking down the pathway to my office? None of them could answer the question. That's how unaware we are of our surroundings. And so when we left, I went down with them and I said, so are you looking now? And they were all looking and I said, we bypass nature. We bypass danger. We bypass joy. We bypass beauty because we're so busy in our head. Life is in session, students. Be present.
Yes, be present. I have kind of scary a situation that happened to me last week. I play tennis at a private residence and in front of the residence was a dog tied to a stake, which I think is cruel. Yes. And every time I would walk by, the dog would bark at me. And I consider myself like a total like dog person, dog whisperer. And I didn't know intuitively if it was a friendly bark, like come play with me, or I want to bite you bark. And I just would ignore the dog because I didn't know. I honestly just didn't know what the bark meant. So I didn't want to risk it. Then one day, actually it was 2 weeks ago, I see one of the guys that I'm playing tennis with. He is petting the dog. And I was like, oh, okay. So it was not a hostile bark. And I let the dog smell my hand. And then he like aggressively bit my leg. Like I've never been bit by a dog in my life. And it's been 2 weeks. The bruise is still there. So I didn't listen. And the lesson to me, Susan, was I didn't listen to my intuition. I didn't want to be scared because I want to be this like strong, badass, empowered woman. And I don't want to be scared because I love dogs so much. But my intuition was telling me that dog is not like loving. He's not friendly. But it was really a painful lesson because how could a dog be friendly to one person and not another? but that's just an example of listen to your intuition, especially women. I think we are very, because we've always, you know, been like less strong, weaker. I don't like to say weaker, but just less physically strong in many cases. So we've had to really have this intuition about safety.
Yes. And I think women are naturally born with it and they birth children who are naturally born with it. And we are natural mothers, most of us. And whether we adopt, whether we foster, it doesn't matter. Even if we don't have children, we're natural at it, most of us. And I think that we have to have that intuition in order to protect ourselves and our children. Throughout centuries, we've had to protect ourselves and our children. And it's interesting to me that you talk about not listening to that intuitive hit, because we want to push it aside. We want it to be different.
Right.
But you intuitively, your first intuitive hit was, I don't know if I'm safe.
Right.
And that's what we don't listen to. And then we talk ourselves out of it with our heads. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying about staying in that intuitive knowing so that we don't get bit by the world at large.
And it could be a serial killer. So women, if you're listening to this, if you're getting that creepy vibe, that weird, I don't know, there's something off about this person, or I don't feel comfortable getting in the car, that is your God-given intuition. And I encourage you not to dismiss it and talk it away and to listen to it. It's always better to be safe than sorry.
But we say, I don't want to be mean. Everyone else says they're nice. You know, we go down all those roads and we end up in really bad situations. I had a client who did that, exactly that, with an infamous serial killer who was just arrested with his brother, one in California. And it was quite infamous, this man. And she was in the car with him and he got out to do something and he pulled something out of his truck. So she looked on the side panel watching through the mirror and it was a blanket, rope, and a hammer.
Oof.
And, you know, she wanted to talk herself out of it. You know, she had all these, she didn't know that his brother was just arrested and was an infamous serial killer. And she came to me and she said, listen, he wants to go out again and I'm scared. And there's a whole story behind it. But at the end of the day, she listened to her intuition. She got out of the car and she went home, but then she didn't trust it. She ended up coming to me and saying, do I need to be afraid? And I said, yes, you do. And this is why. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know his name, but she told me his name and we ended up looking up and my God, his brother was, you know, one of those. So, you know, I do forensic mediumship. I find missing people and I'm dealing with killers. Mm. And so I never talk about any of the exact things I do because, you know, it's dangerous for me. And I follow my intuitive hits the whole time. So the more you practice your intuition, the better you'll be. And a good way to practice, you're in the grocery store. You don't ever bother anyone, but you look across and you ask yourself, what's that person like? Did they have a bad day? And you ask yourself the questions that will tap you into your intuitive self. You don't need to be right. You need to practice. Mm-hmm. It's like you don't need to play tennis perfectly. You need to practice it to get better at it.
Right.
Even if you fail, even if you hit the ball and it goes flying, it's a lesson for you to learn. It's the same thing with intuition.
So how do we differentiate our egoic voice, which is constantly talking to us, from our higher self intuitive voice? Because sometimes it's that old, you know, you got an angel on one side and an angel on the other. Like, how do we differentiate the self-talk?
The way it feels. The way it feels. So intuitive hits are calm. It's calm information. Like when you felt that about the dog, it was just a calm entry, right?
Yeah.
Our fear-based, non-intuitive hits are anxious, overwhelming, fearful. They're always fear-based. And so, you know, my belief system is what we fear, we feed, what we feed, we perceive, and what we perceive becomes our reality, whether it's truth or not. Mm-hmm. So if I'm fearing something, I'm already in it. Mm-hmm. I'm already, you know, in the panic. I might as well be going through it, right? So the fear stops us from listening to our intuitive selves. And you can tell the difference. It's anxious, it's overwhelming, it's ugly, it's dark. Where intuition is light, it's knowing, it's knowledge, and it comes to us peacefully. It may not be a peaceful delivery at once it's delivered, but it comes to us peacefully.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is the rationalization, justification, that is fear-based, and the intuitive knowingness is love-based. It's calm. It just kind of flows into us.
Yes, like the dog is an example. You saw the dog. You cared about the dog. You thought how cruel. You wanted to see it go up and meet the dog, but you got this calm response, not fear. Yeah. It was calm said, you don't know if this dog is kind or not.
Yes,
I did. Right? Mm-hmm. Then we start getting nervous, right? We start getting that fear base come in that says, well, maybe it's not. Well, maybe it is. Well, I'm not sure. You know, I always tell people, if you don't know what to do, you do nothing. Because you need to listen to your intuition. It's telling you don't do anything right now till you get this figured out.
Yeah.
But it's hard to do. You know, I would want to go up to the dog too. And I would talk myself into doing that because I want to protect animals too. I'm a big animal advocate.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we listen, we protect ourselves out in the world. And you know, being a badass is about self-protection. It's not about anything other than that. And we can be kind and decent and loving and good and all those things and still be in self-protection. And I think we forget that as women. It's not kind of me to think bad of that person. It's not kind of me to not get in the elevator. It's not. And what happens is, you know, sometimes not good.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. So speaking of negativity and bad feelings, what can we do to cleanse the energy in our space? Like, let's say that we're buying a new home and we're just like wanting to like cleanse all the negative energy out, or maybe we were around someone who was dumping a lot of like painful negative emotions on us and we want to come home and like kind of recalibrate. What kind of techniques do you have for energy cleansing?
Well, for me, I kind of do this. I'm just getting it off of me. Negative energy, I work on getting it off my body, detaching from it, you know, telling myself all is well in my world. And I always tell myself, not today, Susan, not right now, Susan. So say I'm working with something that's really dark, or I feel that's dark, meaning, you know, when someone loses their child, it's a very dark feeling, it's overwhelming. And I'll drive home and say, and this puts negative energy in me. What if it was my child? Oh my God, I don't. And I start living that. There's that fear base that we live because we're perceiving it as is. And I'll say to myself, okay, wait a minute, not today, Susan, not today. So it's one of the things I do a lot. I also stay where my feet are, and I mean that literally. So I'll say, where am I? What's happening around me? So I might be stirring a pot of spaghetti. I get home, I start cooking dinner, and then all that energy comes in from the day and being out in the world. And I'll say, where are your feet? Oh, they're on the floor. I've got, you know, my slippers on, and I'm stirring a pot of spaghetti. So now I'm coming back to now being present. So that helps me a lot. I'm not big on the Palo Santo and all those things, although I think that some people are, and I think if it works for them, do it.
Yeah.
You know, I have no judgment on it. It just doesn't work for me. I'm more of a intellect in that way. And so I want to think through it. And then I want to do tools. I want tools. And I want to utilize those tools in a way that comes from internal, not external. But I know a lot of people who use crystals and Palo Santo. Do I say that sentence?
Yeah, Palo Santo.
Yes, thank you. And they do other things like that, and that helps them, and it cleanses their environment for them. And if I go to do a house cleansing, I will use those things simply because, you know, I feel like I want to use everything in my power to bring them peace, bringing peace to the person that's in that house.
Yeah,
that's what I want to say. And so I'll use every tool that I have in my toolbox. As long as it's not a broken tool, I'm going to use it. And, you know, because every human is different and every soul perceives things differently. And so at those times, I'll use those things.
So I feel like people are dying at younger ages and unexpectedly and quickly. And I know some people have been telling me, you know, the energy is so fast right now, and if people don't keep up, they kind of just get spun off. So what is your opinion? Is it a soul decision when people decide to leave the planet, or is it God's decision? Like, do they have any input at all? Like, why do people leave like suddenly at a younger age than would be normal to pass away?
Well, I have two brothers who committed suicide and a mother who died from attempts of suicide.
Sorry.
And it's okay. It makes me a better person. I'm a better person for it, not in spite of it. But thank you. And they were young. My brothers were young. My mother was older and not well, but my brothers were young. And, I asked myself that question a lot until I got a little bit older and I started to understand, number one, a lot of people who take their lives are empathic energies. They're either taking drugs to avoid what they feel. And unfortunately, what occurs from that, you know, is fentanyl overdose or addiction that creates, you know, overdoses and, or sicknesses, illnesses from it. And also, I think that empathic energy, you know, trying to escape and they don't know what to do with it. So an empath is someone who feels everything. They walk into a room, they know, you know, they're the kid, the little kid that says, I know you're mad at me, I know you are. And the mommy says, I'm not mad at you. And they go, I know you are, I know you are, I can feel it. That would be your empathic child. Or comes home from school and says, nobody likes me. That would be your empathic child. And I was that child. And I honestly didn't want to be on this planet for a lot of years. Into my adulthood, my young adulthood, I actually fought it. I think that it also can be trendy. I do want to say that, you know, things like suicide and drugs become a trend. People get used to, you know, somebody they know did it and they think, oh, I'm going to do it. I'm unhappy, you know, and they don't recognize that it is finality to this journey here. They don't recognize that. So some of it is free will choices. Some of it is a soul decision. I think in order to pull that trigger or to take that drug, you know, they're making a soul decision and a risk. They're taking a risk that they won't survive that. But do they know what that means? That's the question. Do they know what that means? You know, to not survive.
I'm thinking more like accidental deaths, like a heart attack or a car wreck, not like a suicide. Is that their card gets pulled that day, or is their soul at all involved in that decision? Like, people wake up thinking they're having a normal day, and then, like, you know, 5 hours later, they're on the other side.
Okay. So, I think that our bodies are weak, and I think that we make poor decisions, and others make poor decisions, and so bad things happen. Can some of it be a soul decision? I think so. Can some of it be a decision they made before they got here? I think so. But I don't think every single thing that happens to us is planned event. If that were the case, we wouldn't need to be here because we wouldn't need to learn. We'd already know the outcome. So, you know, that's why I don't believe in being able to read people's future fully.
Yes.
I find that to be very odd when people say they can do that, and I'm not. I honor them if they believe they can do that. I just don't see it as being clear for my mind. If I know your future, then it's a planned event. If it's a planned event, they know your future. You do. Your soul knows. And if all of this is planned, what are we doing here? Because there is no free will then. And free will is what creates our decisions and our choices and expands our soul. So, do I think that it's planned? Sometimes I think that we've made some decisions prior to being here. Do I think all of it is? No.
Yeah, there are some accidents. So when a soul like is on the other side, and do they feel ripped off? Like, oh, I wanted to do so much more. I was like only 30 years old and I cannot believe this happened to me. Like, I feel like gypped out of all these decades of life. Do they ever feel that way? Or is it just like reemerging with like loving, blissful energy?
It is exciting there. It's buzzing. It is not something that you would regret being in. You feel pure love. Pure love. And you feel that for yourself also. So, you know, no, there is no, I wish I could go back into that world where I get beat up and battered and bruised, you know? No. Yeah. And we can experience anything we choose to there, just not in the same way. So we experience it by a knowing, where here we actually have an experiential movement in that experience. We're moving into that experience. So if I were to tell you all about the ocean and you'd never seen the ocean ever, and you read all about it and I told you all about it, until you put your feet in it, you taste the salt, you roll in the waves, etc., you wouldn't really understand it in totality. So that's why we come here for that.
It's experiential, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the last question is, how can we communicate with our loved ones on the other side of the veil?
Ah, well, mediumship.
I know it's through a medium like you, but is there any way for the average person listening to communicate
Absolutely.
With their lost loved ones? What can they
Absolutely.
Do?
Absolutely. So what I find people do is they're already communicating and they don't know it. So you might ask a question to your loved one and you hear the answer in your head and you say to yourself, that's what I thought they'd say. Mm-hmm. Well, you may be accurate at that moment, but once they realize that you're going to accept that they're talking to you in your head, they're going to come and do that often. But what we do is we deny. We deny what we see and what we experience because it's so hard. It's not tangible for us. And we have a human brain having a human experience. So say, you know, a bird is pecking at my window every morning and my child loved that particular type of bird. And I say to myself, it's just a coincidence. They're going to give up. It's like the kid who comes in the house and you're cooking dinner and they pull on your leg and go, mommy, mommy, mommy. And you're too busy and you don't respond. They go give up. They walk away. They go watch TV. They go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of give up and then they try a different way. So once you start acknowledging that you are receiving something, right or wrong, you can never be wrong, because once they realize that you'll receive them that way, they're going to come that way and they're going to come over and over until you get it. But it's a matter of getting rid of your limiting beliefs. And I think that that's what our brain does to us on this planet in everything we do. We limit our beliefs. I can't do it. It won't work. I'm not going to be successful. You know, we're limiting our beliefs all the time. And we do the same thing with the spirit world. But every one of us has the ability to tap in. We just have to accept it and move through it and allow it. So it's kind of letting go and allowing, getting rid of the limiting beliefs, and then acknowledging. So the difference between me and someone who isn't an active medium is whatever I get, I say, right or wrong. And I taught myself what it felt like to be inaccurate by being inaccurate. Mm-hmm. And then I became more accurate. That makes sense.
Yeah. Very, very interesting stuff. Last question. If there was a billboard on the side of the highway that could give the world one message from Susan, what would it be?
You are loved.
Oh, I like that. I love that. You are loved. You heard it here. And how can people find out more about you, your events, your retreats, your book, all the things Susan Grau?
SusanGrau.com. It's G-R-A-U. Pronounced like Tim McGraw, but it has a U on the end. Susan Grau Official for all social media. Right now, I've got my book on pre-sale, which is really exciting, because what I'm doing is I'm offering 13 Zooms, one a month, to go through every single chapter as the author of the book if they pre-sell it. And they also receive an ebook download when they go to my website. They'll see a pop-up. And when they go there, they'll get a download of an ebook that I wrote that teaches them all about intuitive knowledge and mediumship and how to connect.
Oh, that's a value.
Yes.
Do they get to meet with you on Zoom once a month for 13 sessions?
Yes.
Great.
Yes. on pre-order. I had to limit it, unfortunately, yeah. because I can't have, you know, 50,000 people or 100,000 people. Right. Hopefully my book will sell that many.
Yeah.
My book is called Infinite Life, Infinite Lessons. It's wisdom from the spirit world on living, dying, and the in-between. And I really believe spirit helped me write it. The spirit world helped me write it because I didn't consider myself a writer. It's a really good book. It's hard to put down. It talks about what happened to me in that freezer and then goes to different chapters. It has exercises at the end and integration moments to learn about yourself. I also have a documentary out with Evan Alexander called Beyond the Grave 2013. And it just got nominated for a Beverly Hills Award.
Oh,
and we're going to the Grauman Theater, actually, next week, the Chinese Theater, to experience that event. So there's a lot of exciting things going on. That's pretty much it. I'll be doing book signings. And I ask people if they want me to come to their state or their city, let me know. And if I get enough requests for that, I'll come there. I'm going to be going to the Grove in LA and doing my book launch. And hopefully with Hay House doing a live stream.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Susan, for being on the show and sharing all your knowledge. And thank you, listeners, for being a part of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant show. I am your host, Rebecca Whitman, taking you from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. And if you can find a couple minutes in your busy day to leave a 5-star review, it would mean the world to me. Thank you, everyone, for another wonderful episode. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetize. Bye, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to another amazing episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. It's your loyal listening that makes our show top 0.5% in the world. I would love to connect with you in person. We're having our second international retreat October 3rd through 6th in Belize. If you like yoga, sound baths, and want to get all 7 pillars of abundance to a level 10, this retreat is for you. Just go to the link tree in the show notes to snag your $200 off promo code before April 15th. And let's end the year 2024 with momentum so that going into 2025, you will have so much abundance in all areas of life that you will be setting yourself up for the most incredible year ever. It is going to give you something to look forward to all year. Make sure you snag your spot before April 15th. And if you have any questions, you can always email me at RebeccaElizabethWhitman.com. My email address is on my website. Thank you so much for your loyal listening. And we will see you on the next episode. And some of you lucky ladies will see you in Belize. Bye.